Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich of Crime Talk, and thank you for tuning in. Wow, busy docket again today. The court system just never disappoints. First, Harvey Weinstein case is resolved in New York. A little bit of analysis and some new audio. I bet the prosecutor in New York would have loved to have had. Second, Lori Vallow, Idaho is coming for you. Third, Jesse Smollett is in court nearly 1 year from the date he was last time he had to deal with this little incident. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich of Crime Talk, and thank you for tuning in. If you have not already subscribed, hey, we would ask you, please do so. If you'd like to receive notifications of when we put up new content or go live, hit that little notification bell. As always, leave us a comment about what you think we have talked about here today. We care about what you're thinking. First on the docket, Harvey Weinstein. He was found guilty of two of the five charges that he was charged with in New York State Court. Now, a lot of people are going to say, obviously, Harvey Weinstein lost. And absolutely, he did. He was remanded into custody, you know, handcuffs put on him, hands behind the back, taken off to a holding facility where he will remain until sentencing. A lot of people may say that, yes, he lost, but he won. And he did in one respect, because he's not facing the life sentence. The two counts that he has, one carries 25 years, the other one carries 4 years. We'll see if the judge maxes him out, or if maybe they get a reduced sentence at sentencing. We'll have to wait and see for obvious reasons. We just simply do not know. But the predatory sexual assault, Weinstein was found not guilty. And for those who have been following this, and hopefully you've been following it here, the jury deliberated nearly all of last week. They asked a lot of questions. And then Friday afternoon, there was an indication that the jury was hung and that they were deadlocked as a release related to the most serious charges. The judge gave them what we talked about last week, the modified Allen instruction, basically saying, you know, go back, evaluate yourself, your evidence. If you're only one kind of holding out, think about it and see if there's something that you could do to be persuaded one way or the other, but don't give up on your own convictions if you truly believe that a person is either guilty or innocent. They had the long weekend. The juror probably went home. More than likely, it was one juror or a couple of jurors holding out. They had the long weekend, probably figured, all right, enough is enough. We can agree that he's guilty on lesser charges. We know, you know, these jurors probably know already that there are charges pending in California. And they figured, let the chips fall where they may. We've done our job. Let's find him guilty of what we believe the prosecution has proven beyond a reasonable doubt, and find him not guilty as to what they don't believe that he was found guilty of or was proven beyond a reasonable doubt. And that was obviously the more serious charges. This case, and the district attorney who was taking his victory lap, said this was a difficult case because obviously the time that had gone by, they would have liked to have had more witnesses. But given the statute of limitation issues that came up, they were still pleased with the verdict. Now, the defense gave the obligatory, we're disappointed with the verdict and we will appeal. You never want to hang your hat on an appeal. You oftentimes, as a defense attorney, like Ms. Rotuno did in this particular case, you get into what I refer to as trial psychosis, okay? When you have a client that's confessed, he's on video, you have eyewitnesses coming, you name it, and you think, all right, I got to get into trial psychosis mode, I'm ready to go, and you think, is that all you've got? A confession, an eyewitness? Is that it? Oh, we got this. And then you start coming down afterwards, like, oh my gosh, this is outrageous. This is a travesty of a mockery of a sham. We're going to appeal. And then you start coming out of it and you start thinking that, okay, yeah, maybe the judge made the right decision and the Court of Appeals will more than likely come out with a ruling. Although there was error, it was harmless. in light of the overwhelming evidence. Now, in this particular case, the big issue would be the 404B evidence that the judge allowed in for Mr. Weinstein to be used against Mr. Weinstein. And that's the evidence of people that were not charged, but was similar conduct to show a pattern of conduct. The old, let me lure you back to my hotel suite where you can, you know, discuss your career and your future in much greater detail once I get to know you a lot better, that kind of thing. Mr. Weinstein probably won't have a great chance on appeal on that particular issue because his attorney, Ms. Rotuno, eviscerated, cross-examined, I mean, made one of the witnesses literally break down on the stand and cry where she couldn't go forward until the next day after they took a break. All right? That's cross-examination. That is the greatest truth-seeking tool ever invented, okay? And it worked. The jury found him guilty of some charges, not guilty of the other. There's not going to be any error. You know, issues will be raised as, you know, jurors, objections. Every time an objection is made in court, that is a potential issue on appeal. You know, I know some jurors like, why is that guy over there always objecting to every question? Well, you have to, because if you don't object to a question that you think is legally impermissible or is going to result in evidence coming in that is going to be impermissible, you waive it. And the only way the Court of Appeals or any court at the higher level can look at it is basically in very limited circumstances, and this is getting maybe a little too much in the weeds, but it's been called plain error, where it was so obvious that basically the judge wasn't doing his or her job and allowed it to come in. It does not happen in that many cases. And, you know, only 2% of all cases that go up on appeal ever get remanded for a new trial. People are entitled to a fair trial. They're not entitled to a perfect trial, which is what DAs and appellate counsel will tell you all the time. A lot of people know, and most people, you, I'm sure, are Crime Talk aficionados know, Mr. Weinstein is the poster child for the hashtag MeToo movement. And he started it basically because of the expose that was done about Mr. Weinstein, who had a kind of Jekyll and Hyde personality where he could be super charming. But then if you, the type of individual, type of woman that rebuffed his advances, he would basically say, you're never going to work in this industry. Nothing gets done without me, what have you. And the defense tried to play this throughout the whole trial. And frankly, it made sense because what else are they going to say? It's consensual. If they're, you have two defenses in a sexual assault case, I guess three. One, I wasn't there, so you got the wrong person. Two, maybe I was there, but nothing happened. And then third, if something did happen, it was consensual. And you have to pick one of those horses. So the defense picked the horse of let's ride. It was consensual. And these ladies were using Harvey Weinstein just as much as he was using them. So basically, let's face it, what they were calling it, they were calling it basically prostitution or consensual, I guess, and everybody's getting a little bit of they want. And the problem the prosecution had in this particular case was the fact that so many of these complaining witnesses, victims in this particular case, kept communicating with Harvey Weinstein. Now, I get it. Arguments can be made that you had to keep in touch with this person, okay? But I think most people look at it and say, if this person did these bad things to me, I don't want to be anywhere near him. And you know what? I'm going to get ahead in my career based upon me being a great actress, a meritocracy versus I have to sleep my way to the casting couch to get a job. Frankly, I think that would be a little demeaning. And the fact that these women kept in touch with him in these flirtatious emails didn't help. And I think that's why ultimately the prosecution did not get the sexual predator counts in the end. Let's talk about this, okay? I keep referring to this, and not that I think that I know everything, because every day I learn something that I didn't know. It's one of the things I love about this job. But in a video that we did, it was called The 12 Undeniable Truths of a Criminal Defense Attorney. All right? Rule number one, there's two types of people in the world, those that are humble and those that are about to be. All right? Mr. Weinstein has been humbled. if he had just been nice, if he had actually cared, because that's another rule that we put in that video, which was it never hurts just to be nice. If Mr. Weinstein truly had an interest in being a mentor to all these young actresses out there, he could have done so. And he could have done so not in his hotel suite, okay? And when I brought this up the other day, a lot of people said, how dare you, Scott? How could you possibly say that, you know, this is just the way it was? I've gone to lots of hotel suites. A lot of people get hotel suites, okay? Seen lots of hotel suites, big grand things, okay? You know how many business meetings we've ever conducted in any of those? Zero, okay? People that get those types of suites, either A, get them comped, B, someone else is paying for them, or C, they have so much money, it doesn't matter. But guess what? There's little business to none that's ever conducted. Exhibit A, Harvey Weinstein, okay? Most people are not going to conduct business alone in their hotel suite. It's just not done, okay? And if somebody's doing that, you will be a dumb criminal contestant of the week, all right? You simply do not do it. You go have a meeting in a conference room in the hotel. You make arrangements to meet at somebody's office. You don't go to hotel suites. I have met and traveled all over the country to do cases, meet clients. Not once have we ever decided to meet in a hotel, even when there was a suite available. You just don't do it, okay? And if you put yourself in those situations, you're probably going to regret it because it's going to come back and bite you. The other thing about the Me Too movement and Harvey Weinstein as a poster child for this is that if you are in a position of authority over someone, guess what? The dating pool of everyone below you is off limits, okay? Now, they used to have a thing called fraternization in the military. It still exists. You just don't do it. Why? Because somebody always has a control over another person if they're of a lower rank or they're in a position in their chain of command. Think about it. If the boss is dating his secretary, the word's going to get out. Everybody's going to know, right? And they're going to say, oh, wow, look, they're getting all the good time off. They're getting all the good projects. I'm not getting everything. I get the bad shifts. You name it. It looks bad. It creates nothing but hate and discontent. And I have advised people that, hey, if you have met the love of your life, that's fabulous. One of you needs to quit. It's just the way it is. Nothing good comes from those type of relationships. And once again, I think we could ask Harvey Weinstein how that worked out for him. Don't think he's going to say it was worked out okay. Not at all. All right. So that's what we have on Harvey Weinstein. I'm sure somebody will be upset with my analysis and opinion on that, but that's okay. Leave me a comment. Like we said, we can agree to disagree. I just think, and maybe it's, you know, like I said, 25 years of practicing law, seeing all the situations people get themselves into, and I just think, well, why would you have thought that was a good idea? Don't put yourself in bad situations. You know when you're in a bad situation, your spidey senses start to tingle. You think, this just isn't right. Maybe this isn't going to go well. All right? You just never know. Use your common sense. Go ahead and take a listen to this audio that I bet the district attorney in New York would have loved to have had, maybe called Ambra Bratalana to the stand. As Mr. Harvey Weinstein asked her to come back to her room and, you know, maybe just give him a massage or something.
What?
A massage, something.
You know, I'm shy.
I know, but a massage, something nice.
Can I stay on the bar?
No, you must come here now.
Not today, maybe. No.
A little bit.
Please. No, I don't want to.
All right, we'll see. We'll see.
What would you do if your boss, the guy that's hiring you, wants you to give a massage? You probably wouldn't go. If you have talent, you don't need to go to the casting couch. Let's face it. Bottom line. Throughout life, the cream always rises to the top. And even if you got the one job because of the casting couch gig you did, guess what? If you're not any good, you're not going to get any more movie gigs or any other type of gig. Once again, it's common sense. The cream always rises to the top. Next on the docket, Lori Vallow. Now, we talked about Miss Vallow. She's the woman from Idaho. She's got bodies dropping left and right around her. She's got new husband number 5, who his ex-wife or wife is deceased, but fortunately didn't have the autopsy. Now they're exhuming her. I mean, this woman has more bodies around her. She's being charged with the abandonment of JJ Vallow and Ty Lee, her daughter, who is 17. Now, Ty Lee was last seen September 8th near Yellowstone. JJ Vallow was last seen on September 23rd through a Ring doorbell camera that the police have obtained. Now, Ms. Vallow acts like no big deal. We talked about it briefly when we went live on Saturday. She simply looked like she was bored, and why did she have to be here? It looked like I was reprimanding one of my children, and they weren't taking me very seriously. But I think things probably got real for Ms. Vallow right after the judge said, nope, $5 million in bond to post that. That means a bondsman will want $5 million in collateral in case she doesn't show up for court, if she can post that bond. Now, the governor of Idaho today said that he will do anything he can to expedite the governor's warrant to get Ms. Vallow back to Idaho so that they can resolve this matter through the judicial process. This process will take some time. Normally, from the time that she's arrested and advised, it could take some 90 days, which is required under most statutes, to get the governor's warrant. And it's simply a document saying, we want Ms. Vallow, we believe she's committed these crimes, and you're holding her. Governor signs paperwork, put a little fancy seal on it. The governor in Hawaii will get it and say, hey, you've got a fancy seal, I have a fancy seal too, let's have fancy seals together. He signs it and puts his seal on it and says, go get it. And then Ms. Vallow will be extradited back to Idaho. And one would think, and I even said, oops, all expense paid trip. No, it's not. Guess what? Because they will charge her the cost of the extradition, ultimately, if the case is resolved with a guilty plea of some type. And I can imagine, you know, you got to pay a couple of deputies to go there to pick her up, to keep her, put her on the plane. Probably talking $5,000 in expenses to get her there back to Idaho. Now, what they're set for on March 2nd is an identity hearing to simply establish if this is the Lori Vallow that they're looking for, and if she is, in fact, the Lori Vallow that they're looking for, and they found her in Hawaii. Should take about 15 minutes, and it should be a no-brainer. We'll try to have it live, assuming we can get that feed as well. Miss Vallow, I think, is going to spend the rest of her days, and since she's an alleged doomsday, end-of-world type of person, maybe this is, in fact, what's coming down, but I believe she will be spending it primarily in prison, in custody, unless some of her followers, perhaps some wealthy ones, decide to help bond her out and pay for her legal fees. One word of advice, you know, the new husband, Mr. Daybell, Chad Daybell, if he wants anything to get away from this woman, now is his opportunity. Run. You can say the money's tied up. You can do whatever. Run, run, run. But I don't think he's going to do that. I think he's going to be with her till the bitter end. And he may have a little exposure himself. But as always, everyone that we talk about here who has not been convicted either by a jury or a guilty plea is presumed innocent. Now, let's talk about the next matter on the docket. Jussie Smollett appeared in court today. He entered a plea of not guilty to his 6-count indictment of lying to the police. For those of you who do not recall, Mr. Smollett, literally over a year ago, claimed that he was attacked by two men wearing Make America Great Again hats in Chicago. He called the police. They didn't really believe him up front. They took the report. They started looking into it. Obviously, it's a serious crime. This guy's a celebrity. They have to look into it. Well, guess what? The two actors, the two brothers, bodybuilders, fitness guys, whatever they were, that were going to be implicated in this were like, whoa, hold on. We were paid to do this. We'll cooperate in any way that we can. And cooperate, they did. Now, the district attorney, Kim Fox, there in Cook County, Chicago, Illinois, said, hey, you know what? I know Mr. Smollett's family. I've had communication with him. So I'm going to recuse myself, okay? I am going to say we cannot prosecute this case. We're going to bring in a special prosecutor. And normally that means bringing in somebody from a completely judicial district to prosecute the case. Well, Ms. Fox, trying to outsmart everybody, says, I'm going to recuse myself and I'm going to create what we call in the legal field a Chinese wall. I can still do this case, but there's going to be a big wall, you know, referring to the Great Wall of China, and I'm not going to be able to see what goes on over there. All right. And what Ms. Fox did was appointed her deputy to handle the case. All right. Now, let's face it. There's a deputy there. His boss is, you know, just across the invisible Chinese wall. Do you think there was maybe a little chat off the record? Yeah, there were no surprises, I'm sure. Anyway, they make Smollett a smoking deal, basically dismiss the case, forfeit your $10,000 bond, and do some useful public service. Case closed. Everyone's completely outraged, except Jesse Smollett. And I said at the time, hey, if I would have got that deal, I'd be saying best attorney ever, right? But things didn't go well for Smollett because, first of all, he was dismissive of it. And that pissed people off. Once again, should have just been humble, paid his money, walked away. When the police said we want our $130,000 in investigator time, he probably should have paid it. That would have been my advice. Pay the money, go away. He said no. So then he gets sued. Well, then there starts an inquiry, and it's still an ongoing inquiry as it relates to Ms. Fox and how she conducted herself, which just happens to coincide with the election, as she so nicely pointed out. But a special prosecutor basically looked into it and determined that the DA's office of Kim Fox had no authority to make the deal because she said she had recused herself, but that she didn't recuse herself because she just appointed her deputy, and therefore really it wasn't a recusal. So basically, everything that happened was null and void. And that was determined by the courts, okay? And these are Chicago courts, and I've never practiced there, but we've all heard stories about Chicago, how things get done, right? I'm not saying it was, but listen, somebody said this wasn't right. The judge said, nope, do-over. Special prosecutor comes in, now charges Jesse Smollett. Here we are. Jesse Smollett's attorneys are going to say that the case should be dismissed based upon double jeopardy grounds because he's already, you know, had pled guilty to his disturbance of the peace, had his disposition, everything's been paid. And that would completely been the case if Ms. Fox had followed the law, which she was sworn to uphold, but she got cute. She got real cute and it came back to bite her, and it may come back to bite her even more. So I think Jesse Smollett's motion to dismiss based upon double jeopardy will be denied. We'll see if Mr. Smollett goes to trial. I think there's going to be a plea in this particular case, but we will have to wait and see. Somehow, I don't think Mr. Smollett has quite been humbled just yet, and it's going to take a little more time or a little more threat of possibly prison. Will he go to prison? Yeah, probably not, unless the judge says, you know, it's obvious you did something, no acceptance of responsibility whatsoever. Suddenly, it could start turning into a jail case. We'll see. Now, next on the docket is our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Now, let's get something clear here, ladies and gentlemen. I've had a few people, and I say a few, because I think most people appreciate the dumb criminal contestant of the day for what it is. We're not saying necessarily that the people are dumb. Most of these people, I've represented people like this that have done crazy things, and you just wonder why they did it. And it usually involves drugs and alcohol or possibly mental health issues. And there is nobody more sympathetic to those three matters when it comes to a client than this guy, okay? Because I deal with it on a daily basis in my law practice, okay? But the point is, some days, if you do nothing but deal with death and dealing with people at the lowest point in their lives, if you can't have a little bit of a laugh every now and then, you probably would cry, okay? Too often, people that do this type of work, and I can just speak from our community here in Denver, I would say on average, we lose 1 to 2 people that do criminal defense attorney work through suicide, okay? So you have to have an outlet. You have to be able to turn it off. You have to be able to not let it get to you every day and still be able to care for your clients and still be able to, you know, argue for justice. So that's why we do the Dumb Criminal Contestant of the Day. It's not to demean anybody, but these are facts, and that's what we've talked about. These are facts. They are presumed innocent unless they pled guilty, all right? And they're not necessarily dumb, but what they've done is dumb, all right? So let's talk about our contestant for the day. Our Dumb Criminal Contestant of the Day comes from Arizona, a 29-year-old man named Jackson Hanley. Well, Mr. Hanley, going out celebrating his 4 months of sobriety, thought it would be a good idea to go basically test drive a motorcycle and, well, try to steal it. He didn't have permission to actually take the motorcycle for a test drive. He just kind of took it. It was obvious to the motorcycle store employees that Mr. Hanley was not capable of test driving the motorcycle because they believed him to be intoxicated. They believed him to be unable to safely operate a motor vehicle, even to the slightest degree. But that did not stop our champion today. No, he took the motorcycle for a ride and ultimately was found resting on a fence with the bike slightly tipped over, but still upright. Mr. Hanley told the police that he was celebrating 4 months of sobriety and decided he wanted a motorcycle. Hanley reportedly said he was going to walk it back home and try to start it there. Now, I guess I should have mentioned that Mr. Hanley rode his bicycle to the motorcycle store, and Mr. Hanley also caused some $3,500 damage to the Kawasaki that he took. Mr. Hanley's been charged with felony theft. So that is our Dumb Criminal Contestant of the Day. Not that he is a dumb man. He may be a very nice man, but the reality of it is what he did was dumb. And why did he do it? Probably because he was making some poor life decisions based upon the influence of alcohol and or drugs. I am no teetotaler, I assure you of that. But I have seen it over the last 25 years that people make some really poor decisions when drugs and alcohol come into play. That's all we have today for you on Crime Talk. Let me know what you think about Harvey Weinstein. Did he win? Do you think anyone will notice and stop having those business meetings in the suite? Let me know what you think about Ms. Vallow, and let me know what you think of Jesse Smollett. And of course, let me know, are we just being mean when we talk about our Dumb Criminal Contestant of the Day? Have a great day. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.